Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show, folks. This is Tony, and I'm coming to you from Pennsylvania in the USA at the moment, not back in New Zealand yet. And I have on the line with me John Heller, who is frequently on the A Minute to Midnight show, but it's been a wee while since you have been, John, so welcome.
Yeah, good to be back, Tony. Welcome to America.
Yeah, well, I've been here about 3 months at the moment, and I love it here in Pennsylvania, but at the same time, I'm also starting to get the wanting to go back to New Zealand feeling a little bit as well. It'll be hard either way. It's sort of like having two homes.
Calm, unified, nothing happening, America.
Yeah, well, New Zealand's kind of a bit bizarre at the moment, following it from here too, because there's an election coming up in New Zealand before the American election. So, you know, we've got all this crazy politics nonsense going on both places.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could talk a little bit about that if you want. The election here is just, to describe it as bizarre is an understatement. I was watching a little bit of the confirmation hearings for Amy Coney Barrett this morning, and watching, it's so bizarre watching all these people sitting there in these masks, and you can't understand them half the time. I notice when I go out, I try not to wear a mask as much as possible, but if like I'm at a drive-thru or something, I can't understand the people. I mean, it's hard enough to understand somebody at a restaurant drive-thru, but now you throw in a mask into the equation with the lousy mics that they use, and it's impossible to hear these people. It's a maddening process. But then you add on top of that, you have these politicians running around. They're saying whatever they're saying, and it's hard to understand them. And so Joe Biden, to be honest with you, makes even less sense than he normally does.
Yes, no, it's crazy. I mean, even walking into a shop and trying to talk to somebody, I find it so difficult here, especially with my Kiwi accent. In America, it's hard enough for people to understand what I'm saying half the time anyway. But put a mask on, which I hate having to wear, and, you know, it's like, what are you trying to say? They can't understand, you know. It's like,
I know, and everybody's... And it's like everybody's deaf now, and it's like we all live in an old folks' home.
It's just insanity.
It is. And so then, but, you know, you put on this. So we had this confirmation process going on with a lady that appears on every measure to be eminently qualified to serve on the United States Supreme Court. I'll give you the example of the level to which it's sunk. There's an article this morning about someone who went to an all-Catholic girls' school with her in high school who says, I hope she's not confirmed. And like this is supposed to persuade people that this lady who has a sterling legal career, both in the law firm she's been in, the professorship that she had, the time that she served on the judge at the Circuit Court of Appeals. And so when somebody says, well, you know, I thought she was a little bit stuck up in high school or something like that, and I wouldn't confirm her to the Supreme Court. Like this is serious discourse now in our country. You then have Joe Biden, and the Democrats are clearly planning on, if she is confirmed and the Democrats get control of the House and Senate and the White House, there's no doubt that they will pack the court, which means that they will increase the number of justices from 9 to, say, 15, and they'll put 6 of their cronies who will rule their way in cases onto the court. And there's really nothing constitutionally to prevent them from doing that. It's the number of people in the Supreme Court has varied over time. It's been 9 for a long period of time. But back in the 30s, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was getting a lot of his New Deal legislation declared unconstitutional. So he proposed increasing the number of justices on the Supreme Court to 15 or 20, whatever the number was, pack the court with people that would rule his way. And it was sort of that time that the Supreme Court shifted from an institution that just was to decide the law based on the Constitution and laws of the United States to a political animal. And now everything is a partisan fight. For example, you know, if Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed by the Senate, which it looks like she will be, the vote will be like 51 to 49, or it might be a 50-50 tie, which Mike Pence would then would break the tie as the president of the Senate. But it's shocking to me that she would be so narrowly confirmed to the Supreme Court. This is one of the leading indicators of the division in our society. Back in 1993, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who had a history of incredibly radical left-wing ideas, sort of doing away with all distinctions between the sexes, lowering the age of consent and sexual relationships, she wrote a book on it. She was confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court by a vote of 97 in favor and 3 against. And now we're to the point where a lady like Amy Coney Barrett, who is very religious — I don't agree with the religion that she follows, I mean, that I think I've made that pretty clear — but, you know, she's a mother of 7 children, 2 of whom are adopted. She has a incredible personal record and demeanor and morality, and she's just going to be barely approved. The whole thing is insane. It's just insane. So now we have in the elections, we have the situation where somebody like, when people ask Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, are you going to pack the court? And they won't answer the question. Joe Biden even came out the other day and said, in response to a question, don't you think the voters deserve to know whether you're going to try to increase the number of people on the Supreme Court? And Biden says, no, they don't deserve to know that, because that's changing the issue. Now they're coming out — this is so bizarre — they're coming out in the last 24 hours saying that Donald Trump is trying to pack the court by filling a vacancy. It's what he's allowed to do under the Constitution. And yeah, the Republicans are a bit of a hypocrite, because they did not allow Obama to appoint someone to the Supreme Court in the last year of his. But you know what? That's politics, you know, and they were able to do that. It sort of baited Harry Reid, the president, the majority leader of the Senate, into doing away with the filibuster rule, where people would have to have 60 votes to get through. He changed it to a simple majority. Now they're complaining they want to bring back the filibuster. Well, you were the guys who put it out. It's a constant battle, and there's some warnings. You know, as I do, I follow the news because I want to see what's happening, attack on Christian worldview, and what's happening on the prophecy side of things. And I have to tell you, this morning I sat down and I started going through the news, and it was, I think, each day the amount of time that it takes me to get to the point where I just say, you know, I'll go clean something in the house instead of pay attention to this nonsense. It just wears me out.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that. I know a family here. I've seen that they're glued to Fox News basically all day. And of course you get other people the same with CNN. And it seems like pretty crazy to me, the whole thing.
I did turn on MSNBC this morning, Morning Joe Scarborough and his, I guess they're married now, Brzezinski's daughter, Mika Brzezinski. And it took me it was like a minute, and I was just, okay, I can't take this anymore. Because it's like we live in alternate universes. Like, we can't even agree on what facts are anymore.
Yeah. I think that's deliberate. I think there's a deliberate agenda to skew everything so no one knows the truth about anything.
Yeah, and it becomes nefarious. People try to take advantage of that for control purposes. But I will say that my view is that the election will be a logistical disaster. I don't know how it's going to be avoided. The Democrats have been pushing doing away with any restrictions on mail-in voting. One of my close friends said that he and his wife, they've lived in the house there for 10 years. They've received ballots that they could, if they wanted to, they could fill out and mail in the names of 8 different people at their house that used to live there, some of whom may not have ever been an eligible voter. And so what do you do in these circumstances? And so there are going to be court challenges to whatever happens. There's already been this narrative created that Trump will refuse, even if he wins on election night, it appears that he's won in a landslide. The narrative is, well, we have to count the mail-in ballots. There will be court challenges ad nauseum. Those will end up eventually at the Supreme Court, which is why it's important to get somebody there who is a tiebreaker, like, or could be a tiebreaker. I don't know how she'll rule, Amy Coney Barrett. I'm confident that Amy Coney Barrett will make rulings in the future that I will find to be very disappointing in terms of what my own political persuasion is. But without her there, the court vote could end up 4-4. And when the court is 4-4, the lower court decision will stand. So you will watch the Democrats run to court jurisdictions where there are a large number of Obama appointees. When you file a case in federal court, there's usually a blind draw. So here in my district where we live in the Southern District of Ohio, we might have 9 federal judges. I'm just pulling a number out of a hat. I think it's about 9. And so when you file a case, it's a random draw. You know, 2 cases might go to this judge, and then this case goes to this judge, and it rotates through, and then the next judge in the next batch will get 3 cases. So it's a totally blind random draw. But they will try to go to districts where there are a large number of Obama and other Democrat appointees, so they can get the case in front of a Democrat judge who is more likely, unfortunately, more likely to make up the law as they go along. And you see this happening all over the country. They could, even if they don't get the judge they want, they could dismiss the case and refile it to try to get a different judge. So this, I do not believe myself that we will know the winner of the election with all these challenges when the time comes to count the electoral votes in early January. And if that extends out any period of time past January 20th, the date that the next president is supposed to be inaugurated and sworn in, it's going to be chaos. We're sort of in unprecedented territory. Now, I hope that the election results are clear and unmistakable, but I just don't think that that's going to be the case. And then when you layer on top of that all the stuff that's going on with the violence and protests and that type of thing in the cities, I think it's going to be a very, very rough. The next 90 days, I pray that it's only 90 days of chaos. I fear that it's going to extend beyond that.
Yeah, because neither side is going to accept the result if the other side wins. I mean, that seems pretty obvious from what I've been seeing, comments being made online and so on. And I think, yeah, right, it's probably going to be organized and engineered chaos for a reason, because it's a takedown of the United States of America, basically, all in all. Okay, and John, yeah, that's the crazy thing. You've got this going on in America. And, of course, back in New Zealand, for our New Zealand listeners, you know, there's elections even sooner in New Zealand. And it's really interesting. I see smear campaigns, because New Zealand's system is a bit different than America, where there's a lot of parties, not just 2 main parties. We have 2 main parties, but there's a lot of minor parties that can get into government as well, and people can vote for all of those. And it's really interesting. I've been seeing online real smear campaigns by websites like stuff.co.nz against conservative type people, or, well, there's a couple of parties in New Zealand. There's a New Conservative Party, which is basically really all the things that as Christians you would support, they tend to support, you know, they're not pro-abortion and so on and so on, all of these things. And so there's smear campaigns against them. And then there's another guy, Billy T. Kahika, who's got another party, Advanced New Zealand, and there's smears going on against him and that party as well. So they really don't want, they want to keep it in the main parties, and anybody that's got real sort of different viewpoints, they're smearing them in the media. And that's happening big time. To me, it's like, it's really obvious they're going to do everything to try and get the same Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, a Labour-led Prime Minister, Labour-led government again next time with an even bigger majority, so they can pull even more, you know, policies without interference from other parties. That's where it's going. But it's really interesting because actually I saw this morning the New Conservative Party's Facebook page, an interesting little statement made there. It said, from January to September this year alone, over 30% of our laws have been passed without going through a full select committee process, the very safeguard which ensures public security and debate. The foundations of our democracy are being eroded by the very people elected to uphold them. And this is it. This whole COVID thing has meant that you've had rushed through laws and, you know, no proper processes, and this current New Zealand government has done that big time all the way through and passed laws that look terrible, I think. And I can just see, okay, what they want in the future is more of the same in New Zealand, and I kind of don't like that at all. So it's not just America that's got this nonsense. It seems like New Zealand, and then you were saying to me off air, even overseas, some of the things that are going on.
Well, you know, I talked a little bit about this in the update that I did this past Sunday. In Ontario, there's a video out there. I played a clip of it in my update. In the Ontario Parliament in Canada, one of the members was questioning the majority party about, what are you going to do about these new regulations or request for proposal that was put out by the Canadian government to set up these quarantine camps. And the purpose of the quarantine camps is not specifically identified as for quarantine for people who have traveled and works may come home and they want to quarantine them because they might have been exposed to the virus in their travels. It's a very non-specific reason. There's no indication as to how many of these things will be built, when, where, or what they will do. But in the request for proposal, it's quarantine. So the minority party was questioning, as they do in Parliament, okay, majority party, what do you say about this? And they, and like every politician now, it seems to be no one ever gives an answer to anything. It's a ridiculous waste of time to listen to these people. But the point of this is that the majority party in Ontario is at least, it's Doug Ford's party, it's nominally conservative, and they won't even answer the question that what supposedly was conservatives. Then you go to England, which is in the UK, which is clamping down on these virus restrictions and lockdowns and all this sort of thing, and that's technically the conservative party that's in charge. Even when you go to Israel, the same thing. The lockdowns are pretty draconian. It's just, and a lot of it's being designed. I personally think the ones here in the United States are designed to get people to do the mail-in voting, not to do in-person voting, so that the opposition party that can control the votes. And they'll say, well, okay, we need more votes in this particular, in this state, so, you know, go out and do your ballot harvesting and get them, and we'll get the court to extend the deadline, and we'll do away with the witness signature requirement. And then you have, the examples are legion, where people are getting, like I said, my friend got 8 ballots, additional ballots other than the ones in his wife's and his name. He got 8 more. Well, multiply that by, you know, millions of homes, and you have a major problem. So the whole thing is just so in some respects, too, that even the conservatives, sometimes you can't trust them to do the right things. It's just chaos.
I think it's, I've so many times said, I think it's like the double-headed phoenix on the Freemasons motto logo, double-headed phoenix. You've got one bird and two heads, one facing in each direction. And I think this is the Hegelian dialectic. Really, the two parties probably controlled, well, not even probably, I think controlled by the same basic elites underneath it all. And the agenda is the destruction of the things as we have known it, the global system. And America has to be taken down because of it's a strong, big country, but it's happening everywhere. It's actually interesting, too, because I've covered a lot saying, personally, I believe that the whole COVID pandemic really, with all the lockdowns and everything, has been a push by the Davos billionaires really to bring in a great reset. You know, I see a former Australian senator, Corey Bernardi, presented a piece for Sky News Australia in which he claimed that the agenda behind the COVID panic was for the elite Davos billionaires to bring about a great reset that would see permanent social and economic changes, which is exactly what I've been saying in videos for months. Mm-hmm. Noting that there's something unusual about the continuing pandemic panic, Bernardi cited medical experts who now acknowledge that lockdowns don't work and asked viewers to consider, is there another agenda at work? And I think it's really obvious that they're playing us for more lockdowns coming up. It's happening in Europe. We're constantly seeing, the second wave, and so on. And Klaus Schwab, you know, the founder and chairman of the World Economic Forum, has basically said now is a historical moment of time not only to fight the virus but to shape the system for the post-corona era. And that he's almost like an elite among the elites, that guy. And so this is what I see. It's just so frustrating watching this all happening because, you know, in a lot of countries, as soon as you go, hey, we don't like this, or you want to protest, then the police will clamp down on you and you get fined or put imprisoned or whatever it is. In fact, I haven't got it in front of me, but I saw yesterday an Australian couple got fined in Melbourne $5,000 each for driving out of their whatever it is 5-kilometer range to get some vitamins and food, and the police arrested them and whatever. And not just one charge for the couple, but each individual $5,000 each for driving out of the 5K area during the lockdown or whatever.
How did they know they were driving out of their range? How did they know they were driving out of the range? They were tracking them, weren't they?
They must, I guess. I don't know, but it's insanity.
It is. I don't know what the answer is. I personally struggle with it. You know, as someone who's older, I know I need to be careful with this thing. As you know from our discussion, our pastor, who at our little church here in Ohio, he got the COVID virus, and he did have a couple of conditions that were serious, but he had lived with those conditions, one of which he lived with all of his life, and he got the virus and he died. So I think to say that it wasn't the virus is a very naive thing, but it does happen. You know, in the destructive effect of the virus is when you get it, the right, I think it's related, my personal opinion, it's related to viral load and dosage. So if you get exposed to
it. I think one thing that a lot of people would ask, the first question I think a lot of A Minute's Midnight listeners would ask was, had he been vaccinated for the flu in recent years? Because there seems to be a correlation between a lot of deaths with people that have had flu virus inoculations.
I don't know the answer to that. He did have leukemia. He was a diabetic. But again, he had had leukemia I've known him for 10 years, so he'd had leukemia for 2 or 3 years before that. And, you know, so look, he was a high-risk individual, but there was an outbreak in a local school here, and he was involved in substitute teaching at that school. And I think he got exposed to a high dosage of the virus, a large load of it, and it made him sicker than it makes other people. Some people don't even know that they've been sick. So you have to balance that reality. And listen, if you sat here and got the phone calls from his wife and his brother, who were talking to the doctors every day, the things that it was doing to his body were just absolutely, they certainly confirm my view that this is a bioweapon that was either intentionally or unintentionally released. And it, because it just attacked major systems of his body. I mean, he had heart attacks, his lungs were completely destroyed. So be that as it may, it's a problem. But then again, and whether it was planned or not, there are certainly people who had plans to take advantage of a situation like this. And we know, I'm sitting here looking at the strategic intelligence section of the World Economic Forum website, weforum.org/strategic intelligence, I think it is. And, you know, with the big wheel, the spoken wheel thing, that looks kind of like the coronavirus in many respects.
Sure does.
Talking about all the, and this thing, I know they were working on this last year in rolling it out, but when this thing hit, you know, back in, well, I think I did a little midweek update back on April. It was actually April 1st. I remember talking about this thing, and it's like, it's just shocking how this thing is put together and how it is continually populated with articles, videos, data on all these different issues. So I'm looking here, like right now, the COVID-19's impact on travel. And there was an article in the Daily Mail last week about the World Economic Forum is coming up with this thing through the Commons Project called a COVID pass. And so all this thing is, and they're saying, and the World Economic Forum, the point of this is the World Economic Forum is running the show on a lot of this.
Yeah, and they've got, I covered it in a video a few days ago, that the World Economic Forum's COVID pass thing is being trialed at Heathrow Airport.
That's the article that I was referring to.
Yeah, I mean, so there we go. I mean, these people are incredibly powerful. The other thing is that Klaus Schwab, you know, is basically admitted that it's like the climate change thing. It's like an excuse for now, you know, all the green stuff that they've been pushing, and with lockdowns of now, you know, frozen air traffic and all that kind of thing. It's the perfect way of them implementing their climate change propaganda nonsense to the next level, because now they've got everything sort of shut down and slowed down, and there's the perfect chance to bring in all these new green things and as a result of the supposed pandemic. So, yeah, I personally think it's a bioweapon for sure, that it has been used, well, because if you look at everything that it's achieved, they've made in less than a year, they've made strides they haven't made in decades. Well, to bring in these changes.
As I said when we were talking before we started, it seems like a number of years go by each week now in terms of the way things are going. I mean, it's really, for those of us who follow world events and cultural events and relate them to Bible prophecy and what the Bible says the world will be like in the end times, it's shocking how much is happening. And, you know, a lot of people, depending on your view of the timing of the rapture, they say, well, I can't believe we're still here and all this stuff is happening. Well, the fact of the matter is we're here and we have to deal with these things. And the World Economic Forum is not just doing this on COVID, green agenda, strategic development goals of the UN or anything like that. They're doing it on culture. I saw an article last week. I'll have to go back and read it. I just haven't had time to read it in detail. That the key to coming out of this lockdown in a better world is adopting the LGBTQ agenda. What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
It's insanity. And so they're pushing all of these things to tear down society. And then you look at what they're doing with the riots and that type of thing. They're functionally tearing things down in America. They're Marxists. They want, and if you look at Marxism, It's to completely destroy the system and build something new in its place. So I'm against that. I will say this, though, and you know, I know you've talked to people about this. There's the other side of the ledger where people are talking about building a utopia as well. At some point, I don't know if those things merge and we have a big problem. And so sometimes I don't know if this new world order that's going to control everything comes from the left or the right, or a merger of the two. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, because there's people on the right that frankly scare me as much as people on the left when I read what they're saying. So there's been this, we've talked about this theory that there's thousands, now over 100,000, 150, 175,000 indictments that are going to be dropped on everybody. And we're going to take down the deep state and we're going to build this new world. And when you look at some of the people, not all of them, but some of the people that are pushing this, they're radical new age people behind this. New light and merging with our light destinies and all this sort of thing. And it's just, so there, it is the Hegelian dialectic. You got the tearing down on the left, you got the tearing down on the right. And it's a very chaotic time to live. There's no doubt about that.
It certainly is. And the pushing of that LGBT agenda is big. And that's another thing I was looking at this morning, actually, in New Zealand with the election here, and again with the smear campaigns against the new Conservative Party, for example, here. In stuff.co.nz, they ran an article, Stuff did, a few days ago called Kia Kids News, Going Behind the Glitter and Glee of New Zealand's First Drag Musical for Kids, believed to be a world's first. Kia Kids News reporter Charlie Bickerton, 11 years old, of Bellevue Primary School, went behind the scenes of the Glitter Garden showing at Wellington's Circa Theatre to find out more about the musical and what makes drag great for young people. And Charlie Bickerton, who, like I say, is 11, got her own drag makeover behind the scenes of the Glitter Garden. Then a New Zealand New Conservative Party candidate happened to use that in a Facebook post saying, you know, this is not what we stand for, type of thing. Now he's got slammed and Stuff put an article out today. Candidate uses photo of 11-year-old girl for anti-rainbow smear campaign, and the parents of the girl are upset their daughter's name and photo have been used by a political candidate for an anti-rainbow smear campaign. But the thing is, they, you know, it was out there. Stuff put it out there with her picture and the whole article. Now they're going, oh, you can't use that for something that we don't like, kind of thing. But it's out there in the public, and so they're using that because the current Prime Minister and the current, you know, New Zealand political system, parties in power are all in favour of all that kind of thing. So it's like, oh,
so, yeah. Look, I have to admit to you, when you started talking about this, I thought, okay, that really can't be true. And so while you've been talking here, I Googled it. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And then they have the audacity, a drag musical extravaganza for children, the first of its kind in the world.
Yeah.
And then they have the attachment down there, suitable for all ages. What is going on? You know, I've watched this stuff. I've talked about it. You've talked about it for years. And again, we're in this situation where I can't believe what I'm seeing.
Yeah, but the worst thing is you're liable to get a visit from the police or something for even speaking like this. And it's hate speech or something, you know, or child abuse, because you don't agree that an 11-year-old should be going to a drag queen event or something, you know. This is the insanity of the whole thing, the way it's going. You don't have a chance to, they're shutting down any voices that disagree with any of this. That's what's happening, really.
I'm just looking at the description here. It's almost, there's no breaks on sexual perversion. So, you know, Netflix does this thing, I can't remember the title of this little thing with Cuties, I think it was called. where they claim to be, well, we're against sexual exploitation of children. So what we're going to do that is we're going to sexually exploit children to prove how bad this is and put it out there. Now, one county in Texas has indicted Netflix on, I guess, child pornography charges. But, and everybody goes like, well, you're only, you know, as soon as you start saying it, that this is bad, they're going, well, that's not really happening. Or it's like the riots that you see going on for over 100 consecutive nights now in Portland, a riot every night. And they say, well, there's really no violence there, or it's caused by right wingers. I've read a lot of newspapers for years. Over the last 6 months, I have seen an enormous change in, even more so in the mainstream media, to where they are just propaganda rags. Now, you can usually find a little bit about the truth about what they're, if you read far enough down in the article, but there's clearly an agenda behind all of this, clearly an agenda. And they are tearing down everything. They're tearing down governmental structures, social structures, all of these things. I mean, I don't know if you saw the video the other day. I think it sort of encapsulated what's going on. There was a funeral of a man, and the video shows everybody sitting 6 feet apart. And the widow is sitting in the middle. Her sons are sitting 6 feet away on each side. And the one son, then the second son, moves their chair over to console their mother at their father's funeral, her husband's funeral. And then as a third person gets up, all of a sudden here comes the funeral director in to separate them. And it's so bizarre.
Yeah.
And like somebody asked the question, is didn't they ride probably to the funeral in the same car? So you have to balance, you know, what you feel you need to do to be safe in this day and age with the normal human interaction. I mean, we have friends who've had elderly parents like in their 90s die during this thing. They still haven't had funerals for them. And their parents were in the final days suffering alone. Nobody was allowed to go in and see them. And it's, so we're tearing apart the fabric of normal human interaction. It's horrible.
Now, just before we look to maybe wrap up shortly, John, there was another thing that you mentioned to me offline, and that was Macron. You were mentioning something he was doing. Perhaps you want
to elaborate. He has an election coming up in a couple of years. And he's, you know, a typical New World Order, liberal leftist, that sort of thing. Maybe even more so than some others because of his connections to certain powerful banking families, let's just put it that way, in his career. But he's come out with a speech about Islamic separatism. That was about around October the 2nd.
So this and is in France, right?
Yeah, in France. Yeah. So everybody's, oh, hallelujah, Emmanuel Macron is recognizing the evils of Islam and Islamic separatism and that type of thing. And, you know, there's criticism in France. We have the Islamic people come here and their women are forced to wear burqas, which dehumanize them. Oh, by the way, don't forget to put your mask on before you go out to the restaurant. Oh, no, you can't go to the restaurant because all the restaurants are closed. So what Macron is doing is he's tacking to the right because he knows that there's nationalist right-wing parties that will mount a pretty effective challenge to him in the election coming up in a couple of years. So he's putting this in, but he comes out and he talks about Islamic separatism and we have to shut this down. And so he's proposing legislation. I don't think it's hit the French parliament yet, but effectively what they're saying is that in September 2021, they will ban homeschooling for everybody in France. And that includes Christians. So there are currently are about 50,000 children in France being homeschooled. And so some of the homeschool groups are saying, I have to move to England. I've moved back to the UK to homeschool my kid. I can't live in France any longer. Now, Switzerland, we had some friends that lived in Germany, and they were homeschooling their kids, and Germany put in these restrictions, so they moved to Switzerland. Then Switzerland started putting in all these crazy restrictions on homeschoolers, and they came to the U.S. to finish homeschooling their kids. So this has been going on for some time, but now France is going to do it. So they always, the big public thing is Islamic separatism, but we're going to go after the Christians too.
Well, you can see what they're actually doing is trying to bring everything under controlled government propaganda schools, sure. So that nobody can educate their children outside of the indoctrination by the government. And this is happening globally, and of course it'll be world government. Well, we're rapidly heading towards that. It's just sort of little arms of the world government, really, in the United Nations. But you can see that's what it's all about. It's just insanity.
And just let me say this quickly. There's a Financial Times editorial in today's Financial Times from the UK that talks about the strongmen who are working together but in conflict. And it's kind of an interesting take on how things are kind of coming together, because it won't be this monolithic New World Order. It will have a lot of conflicts and that type of thing. And the three examples they use are Erdogan, Putin, and Mohammed bin Salman from Saudi Arabia. And what they say is that they work together and they have conflicts with each other. They even shoot each other's planes down or kill each other's troops. But then they work together when it's convenient for them. And when they're there, when you see them in person, like there was a famous video of Putin. This is after Mohammed bin Salman's charged, implicated in the Khashoggi murder in Turkey. He comes to this big meeting and, Vladimir Putin's giving him the old high five, hey, how you doing, bro, type introduction. So it's very interesting. So as this monolithic thing we call the New World Order comes together, there's going to be a lot of conflict in it, but the ultimate goal will be to control things. And you see that happening on many levels. I just have to tell you, I've been watching this stuff for decades, and it's just, everything is just kind of being ripped apart at the present time. Now, I say this, and sometimes people accuse me of being fearful and nervous and that type of thing. Listen, I live my life. I go to the office occasionally. I just moved. I bought a house. But I also know that there's a lot of things going on in the scene, so I have to make preparations for that. But I also live, I would term it a fairly normal life right now. We go to church. We go to the store. We go to the restaurants that we like that are still open. For crying out loud, we went to go to one the other night. It's right in the middle, right in the heart of one of the biggest shopping areas in Central Ohio. It's out of business. There's a huge reset coming, as you said. I drive by. I do a lot of work in commercial real estate in my legal practice. I drive by these big office buildings. Every office building that I see has a for lease sign on it. JP Morgan Chase has their main operational center here in Central Ohio. It's one of the largest office buildings in the world. I believe it is bigger than the Pentagon. I drove by there yesterday. Now, it was supposedly a holiday, Columbus Day here in the U.S. when we celebrate Christopher Columbus, although the city of Columbus has removed the Christopher Columbus statue. But I drive by this J.P. Morgan headquarters, operational headquarters. There's nobody there. It's like, where did everybody go? It's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. But look, I know God is in control. And I know that these things are being played out according to God's plan. And I know that it works out really well for us in the end, those of us who are true believers in Jesus Christ. And so I take great hope in that. But I can't not look at what's going on in the world and not talk about it, because it's clear that this is what's going on. And it is troubling. It does bother me. It upsets me. I'm not fearful, though, but that doesn't mean, it's pointing out the obvious does not mean that I'm fearful, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But it's a crazy world.
It is. And I think, for those of us that have been around for a while, it is watching the unraveling of everything that we've known, really, and being powerless to be able to change it. But feeling powerless, you maybe can make small changes in your own lives and things, but overall, the global picture, it's set in motion. The steamroller is rolling over everything now, and it's frustrating. I'm not fearful either, but sometimes it can be, you just feel like banging your head against a wall because you can see it all and you wonder how other people can't see what's really going on. But anyway, it is what it is. So, well, John, it's been a pretty interesting discussion again, and I want to thank you for being on the show. Perhaps if you've got any last words that you want to share to the listeners before we close off, that'd be great.
Look, folks, you really need to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with those around you. That is the only hope for this world. It should be apparent to one and all now that hope in the systems of this world is clearly misplaced, and you need to trust in Jesus for your own salvation. I don't know exactly how long this we have in this world. The odds are that I'm going to pass away and die before all this happens, but maybe not. But be that as it may, you need to pay attention to what's going on and take some preparations, because you have a family to take care of. It is shocking to me, Tony, as I'm sure it is shocking to you, that you walk around, you run around, and you see people. And if you try to talk to some people about what's going on, they look at you like you've walked off some other planet. Like, what are you talking about? It's not that bad. It's just amazing to me that people cannot see what's going on. So, but listen, Jesus will take care of it. He's coming back. And in the meantime, we got to fight for what's right.
Yep. Well, thank you, John. Thanks very much for being on the show. Yeah. And folks, don't forget our website, aminutetomidnight.com, and also John's. You can find John at Fellowship Bible Chapel on YouTube as well. And A Minute to Midnight is run 100% by donations. We're grateful to the people that help us keep this show running. Thank you very much. And if anyone does want to help, you can do that by donating at aminutetomidnight.com. And the music in the shows I've written, played, and recorded. And you can find the music on the website, aminutetomidnight.com as well. So that's it for this episode, folks. God bless and stay safe. And with God's blessing, hopefully we'll be back in a few days' time with another show.